Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. In this audio, I want to discuss how Jews think. I think Brother Nathaniel, the Jew who converted to Christianity, I think he also did a video some time back, some years ago, where he said something like how Jews think. But I want to tell you about my experiences with Jews and what I concluded. And I think that what I'm about to tell you is stuff that you've not heard before. And I even think that some of it may be unique, that you won't find that anybody else has made some of these observations. When I was young and living here in South Africa, I decided at a point to start talking to Jews and Indians. I'd heard some bad rumors about both of them, and I thought, well, what harm can there be in talking to other people? So I worked with Jews, and I thought, well, I might as well talk to these people. And as the years went by, I even made Jewish friends. And one of my friends was my best Jewish friend for 23 years. He was quite a lot older than me, and he was very knowledgeable. And I made other Jewish friends. And I even discovered people that I knew that I didn't realize were Jewish. Like one woman at my work, she was good in sales, she'd married an Afrikaans guy, and I didn't realize it, but she was actually a Eastern European Jew. Probably almost an Ashkenazi type Jew. But here she is, and she was looking quite attractive, and she'd married this rich Afrikaans guy. And it was only after I knew her for years that I actually heard her tell me one day that she's Jewish. And yet from her previous surname, it was clear that this is a kind of a weird surname. Now, when you meet Jews and you speak to Jews, they appear to be like other white people, because all the Jews that I knew were basically white. So they look like other white people, they talk like other white people, and if you ask them, you know, what is the difference between a Jew and a Christian, then they'll say, well, you see, we are almost like the Christians, except that we only read the Old Testament. And then we got a book of laws, and that book is known as the Talmud. And so then you look at these Jews and you think, oh, well, okay, so they're almost like Christians. They just don't have the New Testament. They're pretty much the same. And that's that. And the moment that you're already thinking that, you've already just missed over the most important part of Jews. And the thing that you're not prepared for is that there is a hidden element to Jews, and that Jews are a very closed society. And you think you know them, and they live among you, and they talk like you, and they seem to have all the same values as you, but actually, they are very different. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that meeting a Jew is almost like meeting an alien from another planet. The Jew looks exactly the same as you. And when you listen to him talking, he sounds almost exactly the same. However, inside of his head, he could be an alien. This may sound weird, but these people are so different from us. They are so massively different from us. And we don't know it. And part of the reason is because their culture is closed, and their culture actually teaches them to not share certain things with these people outside. Now, Jews have their own built-in racism. But it doesn't work like white racism. White racism is like whites versus blacks versus other non-whites, etc. Jewish racism is where Jews are one race and everybody else is a different race. So it's Jews versus everybody else. And the term that they use for the non-Jews is Goy or Goyim. So the Jews are taught from an early age, they are taught and warned to be careful what they share with the Goyim. But these are just part of their secrets. They've got lots of secrets, these people. What I want to focus on now is, how does a Jew think? And there are two particular aspects I want to discuss about how Jews think. The first one, which I'm going to cover in this section, is going to be emotional thinking versus logical thinking. And I don't think I've ever come across anybody who's touched on this issue. And then the second one that I'm going to touch on in the second part is Jews as managers and thinking like managers, and whites as workers, and whites think like workers. Because once you understand these two concepts, Jews with emotional logic versus, let's call it, real logic or physical logic or mathematical logic on the one hand, and Jews thinking as managers and whites thinking as workers. These two things, once you understand them, you will see how these people are not in any way like us. And the way they approach life and the way they deal with things is not the same as us. And that is one of the reasons why it's so hard to understand them, because they come at things from angles that you're not familiar with. I also have a little bit of a funny thing that I did long ago that I think gave me an insight that not many people have. Back in 1995, after the blacks had taken control of South Africa and they were changing the laws, I was very concerned about being able to keep my job. And I was very concerned that I would soon find myself unemployed. And so, because the internet had come along, I decided to go and start doing something on the internet. And I came up with the idea to write a book. And in those days, I was very spiritual and I believed a lot in prophecy, and I was waiting for World War III. And World War III was around the corner. It was going to happen in 1999. And I decided to write a book based on some of my things that I believed at the time. And one of the weird ideas that I latched onto was a thing called the Hollow Earth Theory, a very old idea. And I basically went and did a whole bunch of updates on this thing, and I thought that this is something that I wanted to convince people about. So I wrote a book and I called it Hollow Planets. I stayed away from political stuff. I didn't want to get involved in politics. I'd never been involved in politics in South Africa. I wanted to stay below the radar. I just wanted to see if I could earn a bit of money and do something that's not going to get me into trouble. And this is where the Hollow Planets thing came from. Then once I'd been doing that for a time, Robert Mugabe seized the farms of the whites in Zimbabwe, and that's where I come from. And so that irked me a lot, and I saw that as a threat to the whites of South Africa. And that was the time when I then became politically active. So I dumped Hollow Planets, even though it wasn't doing badly at all. I dumped Hollow Planets and I went and I started getting into politics. And little did I realize the deception that lies in politics. I knew politics was bad, but it was weirder than you can imagine. And I will still tell you, it is much weirder than you can believe. Politics is very weird. But my Hollow Planets experience gave me a very interesting insight that I never expected to learn. When I did Hollow Planets, I basically was the only guy in the world spreading a certain idea. And it was an idea that nobody else had any interest in. It was an idea that had already died, and I was spreading this idea. And then when World War III didn't come and when the prophecies didn't come true, I then began to start wavering in my belief in these things, and I began to physically distance myself from these things, and I moved away from hollow planets. And I stopped doing hollow planets, and I forgot about it for many years. And then about 10 years later, I began to notice certain things. There were things that I began to learn, and I began to observe things, and people were still communicating with me about hollow planets. I therefore sat back after about 10 or 15 years, and I looked back on my time of doing hollow planets. And I think that I had a unique experience that not many people have in the world. And that unique experience was what I learned about people as a result of doing hollow planets. I was interested in convincing people the Earth was hollow, but in actual fact, what I really ended up learning about was people. And I learned things about people that I couldn't imagine. And it stood me in good stead. It gave me insight, but it took about 15 years for me to start grasping some of these things. And it was the one takeaway that I walked away from Hollow Planets with that I will never forget. I learned things about people that I could not have imagined and that you don't pick up in a book. And this helps me to understand the Jews, because the Jews themselves are a people who tell stories. And these Jews have been telling stories for over 2,000 years, 2,500 or more years. And these Jews have clearly learned things about people that most people don't know. And because they've been doing it for so long, there are lots of things they know about people that normal people will never guess. Furthermore, Jews are very interested in business. They've always gone for business. Business was an easy way of making money for them. And they didn't like being soldiers, being farmers, doing hard physical labor. Jews never liked this stuff. So Jews always started looking for other ways out of it. And the thing that worked the best for them was money and trading. And later on, this became a total obsession, and it totally guides their entire way of thinking about life. The more you understand about Jews, the more you will see that the way the world is going and the way the world is changing, everything in the world is actually becoming more Jewish, especially at the high levels. And if you see the weird ideas and thinking that comes out of people at very high levels, you wonder where the heck is this coming from? How crazy is this? But actually, if you understand Jews, you will immediately begin to see, ah, there must be a Jewish influence there. That must be something that's coming from some Jews who are up there busy influencing somebody. Now, the first thing that you need to understand about Jews and talking to Jews is when it gets to debating with a Jew. If you debate with a Jew, if the topic at hand is not threatening to a Jew, then the Jew will debate the topic with you without emotion, and he's going to accept whatever the outcome is. So if you go to a Jew and you were to talk mathematics to a Jew, and you said to the Jew, 1 + 3 = 4, and you're just talking about maths, then the Jew would say, okay, yeah, cool, I accept that. He'll accept the reality. If you went to the Jew and you said 1 + 4 = 3, the Jew might even say to you, hold on, that's wrong. That's wrong. The answer is actually 5. So when the topic at hand doesn't affect or threaten the Jew, then the Jew is not going to be concerned by the outcome, and he'll be even logical and helpful in that situation. But if the Jew perceives that this topic is either threatening to him or to Jews as a whole or a group of Jews, then this Jew is going to start doing things differently. Now, at this point, I'm going to tell you, the reason that the Jew is going to be able to know certain important points at which he needs to be awake and sharp is because the Jew thinks like a manager and you think like a worker. And we're going to touch on that in the next portion. So, when you are debating with the Jew, what you are unaware of is the Jew has perceptions of the consequences of what you are discussing that he can see coming even before you're aware of it. So the Jew is much more aware when something could be threatening. He can pick it up in an instant, and the Jew will turn around in an instant and begin engaging in defensive measures. You will not even be aware of it. You will not even notice that it's happening. They are so fast. You will think that you're just sitting, as I did many times, you will think you're just sitting and having a discussion over a cup of coffee or a cup of tea with a buddy. But he will perceive straight away when it's threatening to him or his group, and he's going to take action. Now, returning to hollow planets, the Jew, as a writer of spiritual things, an author of Christian things, the Jew knows about the fact that if you want to control people, you've got to control their minds. How do you herd people? Well, you herd people by controlling what they think. And Jews have done this. Even the Roman Catholic Church did this. The Roman Catholic Church, for example, took away the Bible, and common people could not read the Bible. The only people who could read the Bible and interpret the Bible and tell the people what is in the Bible were the priests. This is how the Roman Catholic Church controlled the people for centuries. And I think it was the Protestants who were among the people who changed this so that the Bible is available to the common man. Leaders of countries, high-ranking people, they know that the way to control people is to control the information that is fed into their minds. But nobody has more experience than the Jews at this, because they've been writing religious books and scriptures for a very, very, very long time. And the rabbis are the people who control Jewish society, Jewish religion, Jewish thinking, etc. So the priests of the Jews are the rabbis. So nobody knows more about how to control people and manipulate people with words than these rabbis who have been playing religion for a very long time. Then the other aspect of the Jews is business. And in business, these Jews must have at some points begun to realize certain facts about humans. In their attempts to do business, I suspect that at some point, Jews realized that if you are trying to sell something to somebody, that that person cannot be motivated to buy something based on logic alone. That logic alone won't do the trick. That logic can take you so far, and then the person will stop. Then the person is going to say, I don't have enough money, etc. So you say to him, but I can give it to you for this, and it's got these benefits, and so on. But the Jew sees that he can't make the sale. And I think that at some point, Jews realized that you can make business deals based more effectively on emotion than on logic. That logic will actually be a barrier. Logic can help to make the sale, but logic can also be the barrier. And they realized that if you have somebody whose emotional buttons, you touch the emotional buttons, that that person's going to make the purchase regardless of whether he's got enough money. Suddenly he'll be motivated enough and he'll say, I'll go and borrow some money from my brother, and he'll go and do something, and you make the sale. I think that Jews figured out from all these human interactions, they figured out how to manipulate people to get people to do what is beneficial to them. Another aspect about Jews that you've got to remember is that because these Jews are business people, that for a Jew needs humans like cattle need grass. That the Jew needs to have all those people out there. And the more people there are, the more money the Jew can make. Because the Jew is tapping into people. He's not a farmer. He's not a soldier. He doesn't do labor with a shovel. He's not interested in driving a bulldozer or an excavator. He makes his money and his existence out of people. So when he sees large numbers of people, he likes that. And my Jewish friend, my best Jewish friend, I found that the Jews were completely obsessed with vast numbers of people. They would talk about, oh, look at the Indians, there's 1 billion Indians. Oh, look at the Chinese, there's more than 1 billion Chinese. They are absolutely obsessed with other people's numbers, even though they themselves are very few in number. They are obsessed with other people's numbers because they want to tap into those numbers. They say to themselves, there's 1 billion people. How am I going to make money out of 1 billion people? There's 1 billion people there. I can do something with that. That is how these Jews operate. They do not operate in the white way. They do not think in military terms. They think in completely different terms, in terms of business and also religion and also politics, because from religion and business sprang all other types of human endeavors, politics, etc. Now, when I was debating with my Jewish friend who was incessantly liberal, let's call him pathologically liberal. No matter what you tell him, he ends up being a liberal. And no matter what argument you make, he will come back and tell you why liberalism is better than nationalism, why liberalism is superior to conservatism. He will always take you back to liberalism, always. So over the years, I used to debate with him. And because I go and I do my research and I do my thinking, then we would talk and I'd say to him, you see, here are some facts. This, 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 and this. This shows you that, liberalism is flawed in this way, that way, and that way. So my Jewish friend will then argue with me. Now, when you argue with a Jew in this situation, we are now actually in the mode where the Jew is already feeling threatened. But you don't know it. I didn't know it. I'm trying to convert my Jewish friend from being a stupid liberal into being a conservative, because that's what I was. And I'm also trying to convert him to the importance of racial issues, because I look on him as a white. I look at him, I see him as a white. He looks at me and he sees me as a non-Jew. So I keep trying to approach him as a white. Oh, you know, we got this in common, that in common. We should be working together. That's not what he's seeing. He sees me as something completely different. So in my incessant debates and arguments that ran over 23 years, he would irritate and annoy me at many times. And I'd get really angry with him. Because I'd come, I'd have my facts together. And often we met on weekends. Sometimes we talked during the week. At various times when he became concerned about me and he realized I was becoming even more right-wing, maybe heading off to becoming Nazi, then he took to phoning me for an hour every day. Every day he would phone me for an hour to talk to me. And I thought he was just being friendly. The reality is he was working on me. So the way that it worked was I would have my ducks in a row and I'd think things through during the week and I'd say, okay, that point, that point, that point. Then he pops over for some tea on the Saturday. We sit and we chat the whole Saturday afternoon. And by the time he's finished with me, I'm frustrated, I'm sometimes angry, and I'm confused. And I find that every time we get together, we go through the same process again. That I am happy, I have been thinking, and I'm seeing opportunities for whites. I see, if the whites did this and the whites did that, yes, 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 that would work for us. Yep, this is a good idea. Then I think I'm talking to another white guy and I'm busy chatting to him. And by the time we're finished, I'm already confused and frustrated and I didn't win. And at points in the argument, it's like, yeah, I'm winning. He's even accepting those points. And then later on, by the time we finish, I'm frustrated, I'm irritated. And this process repeated itself year in and year out. And this is because I was making mistakes as a white man. And I'm going to explain to you what was really going on. You see, I'm busy debating something with him that he perceives is threatening to his group. And he's already working on a defensive strategy. And I'm busy trying to convince him with logic. So I'm going to him and I want to tell him something. Now, he's looking at what I'm telling him and he's already ahead of me. He's already jumped the gun. He knows that if the answer, let's say if the answer to this political equation, if the answer is 4, that the answer is going to be bad for Jews. But if the answer is 5, the answer is going to be good for Jews. So when I start debating him, I say to him, listen, if you take 1 and you add 3 to it, then the answer is going to be 4. Now he knows up front already, 4, We can't let this white guy get away with the answer 4. 4 is bad for Jews, okay? So no go there. So what he wants to do is, I'm saying to him, listen, you take 1 and you add 3 and the answer is 4. He's going to spend his time trying to convince me that the answer is 5. However, if he can't convince me that the answer is 5, what he's going to do is he's going to try and make me think the answer might not always be 4. He'll say, well, you see, you could add 1 and 3 together, but you know, the answer might not always be exactly 4. Maybe it's a little bit more, maybe it's a little bit less. Maybe there's a bit of this and a bit of that. So he's going to start trying to fudge the answer so that I don't get to a clear outcome. You see, because he knows that I'm interested in the truth and he knows I'm interested in an exact answer. More importantly, he knows that as a white, that if I perceive that the answer is four, that my actions are going to go with that answer. So if the answer four means chase the Jews out of the country, but the answer five means love the Jews, then he wants the answer to be five, because he knows that the moment that I reach the conclusion of four, that I'm going to immediately start working against him, and he knows that I'll be telling all my buddies, and all of us are going to work against him. So he's got to stop the answer from being four. And so what he does is, when he's arguing with me, this is not a logical discussion. You see, for white people, all white people on the planet, all white people on the planet have got a value system that says, I go with the truth. Whatever the truth is, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the objective truth. I want the real truth. I don't want the maybe truth. I don't want some fairy tale. I just want the truth. All white people on the face of the earth, their highest value, all white people without exception, their highest value is the truth. The truth and reality. But this is not true for Jews and for certain other races. I will later explain to you the differences between whites and why whites are completely superior to other races. What is it that makes whites totally different? What can whites do that is totally unique that nobody else can do? We will get to that topic as a separate topic. But at the heart of the way that whites work, at the heart of it, at the heart of their entire souls, is this concept of the truth. Every white person, regardless of where they live, regardless of where they come from, they all edge towards the truth. And not just a fuzzy form of truth, they're looking for an objective form of truth. 1 + 3 can only be 4. You can't have 1 + 3 is sometimes 5 and sometimes it's 6.5. Whites seek objective truths. All whites seek the objective truth. And their minds are conditioned to that. And there's nothing wrong with it. In fact, it's one of their greatest strengths of all. It is their greatest strength. They seek a truth and an objective truth that doesn't change, a objective, measurable truth. So the white mind is constantly sitting, and when whites are debating with whites, the one guy is saying 1 + 3, you know, could it be 4, could it be 4.5? The other guy says, no, it can't be 4.5, it's got to be 4. So that is how whites talk to each other and how whites think. And they think that when they do this, that they're doing the same thing with the Jew, but the Jew is operating in a totally different world. Like I say, the Jew's already jumped the gun. He knows already where you're heading, and he's got to head you off. When a white is debating an objective fact. The white is debating, and he's bringing his facts together carefully. It also takes him a lot of time to amass his facts. And he himself is also like double checking himself to make sure he's not wrong. He's very concerned not only that he's found the truth for himself, but that he's not lying to another white. This is how all white people are. And you'll find, especially among Germans and Europeans and Bure, you'll find that they are exceptionally concerned about not misleading other people. So they are trying to ensure that first they get all their ducks in a row. Then they check that their ducks are in the right row. Then they go and they tell the other guy. But while they're telling the other guy, they're also like half checking to make sure that they aren't lying to the other person. So when they do these things, it's a slow process. It's a cautious process. And they are very concerned about the accuracy of what they are saying, that they're not deceiving themselves and that they're not deceiving the other people. The Jew lives in a completely different world. The Jew, instead, is a higher level person who looks on these people as his grass, as cattle. And he knows from his high-level position, he knows that those people could come and harm him. Those people could harm him, or those people can make him extremely rich. So the Jew's idea of reality is very different. The Jew's interest, therefore, lies in changing your behavior by working on your mind. These Jews are the oldest propagandists in the world. This is my conclusion. My conclusion is that Jews are the world's oldest propagandists. They've been at this the longest. They have a long, long history of this. Plus, they've got business. And in these activities, Jews have realized the power of how to play with people's heads. So they've got a whole bunch of arguments and approaches when they are dealing with people. They know that if these people like what I'm doing, I could get very, very rich. So they then need to say, how do I get the sales? How do I do this? How do I do that? And Jews have found, in my view, when I look at Jews, Jews have found the power of emotion. They found that you could argue with a guy for a long time, but if you catch him on the right day, in the right mood, maybe you want to sell him a broom. And you go to him and you try and sell him a broom on Monday, and he says, no, not interested. You go to him next Tuesday and he says, no, I haven't got enough money. And then you catch him on another day and he says, you know, the bloody thing of the this, and he's irritated about something. He says, no, I'll buy that damn broom from you. Bang. There is something about emotion that if you catch a person at the right time, that emotion overrides logic. And the Jew knows this. He knows this. And he not only plays on it, he looks for it, and he even creates it. So when you are debating with the Jew, you're sitting and saying 1 + 3 = 4. The Jew is simply saying to himself, 4 is bad for me. I got to get this guy away from 4. So the Jew is not interested in the answer. He's not interested in the correct answer. He's not interested in the accuracy of your equation. He's interested in the outcome, because if that outcome is wrong, it's bad for him. So he needs to make sure that your outcome is something that's going to work for him. So if he can't prove to you exactly that 1 + 3 = 5, then he may muddy the waters and say, well, how can you always be sure that it's exactly that answer? Are you really sure? And the consequences of that, are those really so? He starts messing with your head using other things. The best word for this is the word called sophistry. S-O-P-H-I-S-T-R-Y. Sophistry. It is a good word in the English language, and it means you have an argument that sounds logical, but it's not logical. Sophistry. And if you look around the world, you look at advertising especially, sales, It's filled with sophistry. They are trying to use some kind of logic to make you think this is logical, but in actual fact it isn't. But I want to return to the emotional angle, because the emotional angle is very powerful. After more than 20 years of debating my Jewish friend, one day I got him to actually say something that actually made sense and that I could agree with him on. We had debated liberalism thousands of times, and one day I cornered him and I managed to truly break his argument down. And then finally, out of his own mouth, he said to me, "The real appeal of liberalism is emotional." So he admitted that liberalism's real attraction is not logical, it's emotional. And that was probably the most valuable word that ever came out of his mouth. And it was the only time that I actually got him on his back foot, truly. And I found that even when I won arguments, and I won many arguments, I'd win the argument this weekend, next weekend we're back at it again, and he's busy ignoring my previous wins, and he's trying to tear the thing apart using another angle. And there were times when it would irritate me so much, I'd get so angry, that I would either insult him or I would even cut off contact with him. There was a point in time where he angered me so much. In the early 1990s, he angered me so much that for 2 years I didn't even speak to him. I was so enraged with him. And even when we became friends again later, there were many times when I said nasty things to him because he'd really be irritating me. Because I keep thinking in logical terms. He's not interested in logic. He's interested in getting me away from the answer that's bad for Jews. That's what he's interested in. Now, Jews have got many techniques of dealing with people. And they've got all kinds of tactics, including what I'd call deflection. I first heard the term deflection, or Jewish deflection, from an American guy called Tan Staffel. And deflection is a very effective Jewish tactic. The Jew sees that he needs to move you in another direction. The direction you're going in is bad for them. So he sees, this person's going to the left here. I need to get them to the right. So they got all kinds of tricks and things that move you away from the truth that is going to harm them. Now, a Jew that I've got no time for is Henry Kissinger. But Henry Kissinger is a very important Jew. And Henry Kissinger in particular is the Jew who came to Southern Africa when I was a kid in the mid-70s. And Henry Kissinger came to Southern Africa, and Henry Kissinger fooled the white leaders of Southern Africa. In particular, John Forster and Ian Smith. And he even had something of a minor negative effect on P.W. Botha that also kind of put him a little bit on the wrong side of the track. But the guy he fooled the most was John Forster. Henry Kissinger totally misled Forster. Forster bought it, hook, line, and sinker. Forster changed his foreign policy in Africa. He made a total fool of himself. Every move he made was wrong. It was a total loss. And the Jew Henry Kissinger, operating for the US government, totally fooled this guy. Even Ian Smith, the Prime Minister of Rhodesia, was fooled for many years by what Kissinger had told him. Kissinger had cleverly misled him, and 7-8 years afterwards, only then did Ian Smith begin to ask a few questions. But the Jew had already fooled him, got him to make the wrong move. The wrong move had already destroyed Rhodesia, and it's already game over. Game over. And here's the white guy still thinking, oh, you know, he said this and that, but it didn't quite work out the way he said. You know, shouldn't we talk to him again? Meanwhile, the Jews pulled off what he wanted to pull off. The Jew came, he saw you were going to do something, he needed to fool you, he won a quick victory, you made the mistake, you lost, you're finished, you're out of the game, and the Jews already moved on. And that is how Henry Kissinger fooled our leaders. Now, Henry Kissinger was running around the world doing many cunning, sneaky things. And he was playing all kinds of wild games all across the world on behalf of America. And there's a quote from Henry Kissinger which shows true Jewish thinking at its finest. So here's the quote from Henry Kissinger. It is not a matter of what is true that counts, but a matter of what is perceived to be true. Let me repeat that. It is not a matter of what is true that counts, but a matter of what is perceived to be true. You see, Henry Kissinger is telling you, it doesn't matter what is actually true. What is more important is what people believe to be true. Why? Because people will act on the things that they believe are true. If they believe that 1 plus 3 is 5, then they're going to act in accordance with the answer of 5. That is as simple as it is. That is a perfect example of how the Jew thinks. He knows that people do not go on the facts always. Or if they do go on the facts, all you have to do is mislead them about the facts, and bing, bang, boom, you win. So the Jew is not interested in what the actual facts are. And this is why whites don't stand a chance against Jews. Whites don't stand a chance against these people. Because the Jew is not interested in what the real reality is. The Jew is interested in what you think the reality is. And if the Jew can convince 100 million people of some reality, then he'll do it. We tend to think in terms of right and wrong. Is it correct? Is it not correct? The Jew doesn't think like that. The Jew's interested in what he needs to make you think so that he can win. So if he needs to work on your emotions in order to win, he'll work on your emotions. If he sees, okay, we're going to have to use a mix of logic and emotions, then he may have to engage in some sophistry. But whatever he does, he will focus on his outcome, and his outcome is what you are going to do. He either wants you not to harm him, or he wants you to do something that's going to make him rich. Whatever it is, he wants you to do something for him. He needs to make you act in a way that's going to work for him. That is why he's not concerned about anything, about any kind of facts. He's not concerned at all about facts. He's only concerned about what you think. What is your mind's outcome? And if he needs to scramble your mind's outcome so that it works for him, then he will do that. So if you go to the Jew and you say to him, listen, I hear that you are racist towards non-Jews, and you go there and you're angry about it, the Jew's going to say to you, no, you've got this wrong. You don't understand us. And off the Jew goes down his little path to get rid of your anger and to redirect you in a way that's going to work for him. The Jew isn't going to come at you and throw a rock and brick at you. He's not going to come at you and shoot you. He's going to mess with your head. I also want to tell you another little quote of Henry Kissinger, just to show you what a scumbag he is. Henry Kissinger had a quote about soldiers. And this is what Henry Kissinger, the Jew, said about soldiers. He said, military men are just dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns in foreign policy. So military men are just dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns in foreign policy. So that is how he looked on a soldier. A soldier who's risking his life, who's risking his life and limbs for other people, and the Jew just regards them as idiots. So that is the kind of contempt that he has for those who actually engage in bravery and undertaking dangerous missions. Now, just on this note about the quote about the military men, because Jews have a total disregard for facts, therefore, you will find that a Jew in America is making a certain statement or argument, and a Jew sitting in France will say the complete opposite with regard to exactly the same question. You will find that Jews are completely inconsistent and utterly hypocritical when it comes to answering certain questions, because it depends on what they need to do at that point in time. Then later, these Jews are also sensitive because they are so good at propaganda and manipulating people. They then find that at various times later that people get annoyed at certain things that they've said or done. So then you'll find that Jews are also cover-up artists. They will then have to go and lie about the previous lie. So because they're so inconsistent, because one Jew will say this here and another one will say that there and so on, and every Jew is busy with propaganda, and that includes the rabbis. Every Jew is so busy with propaganda that you then find after a time that, oh goodness, you know, this guy said this here and that guy said that there, or this guy said something and it made a whole bunch of people happy. The other guy over there said something and it made those people happy at the time, but later it angered a whole bunch of other people somewhere else. So then they see, oh goodness, what we've got over there is bad perceptions because of what that Jew said. So now we have to engage in a Jewish cover-up. So then the Jews rush off to cover up and lie about the lie to make those people happy. So they're busy patching up all these problems from their past actions because they're inconsistent. If you are arguing with a Jew about something that's critical to them, then you will also find that if they can't misdirect you, if they can't get you to move in some other direction with sophistry or with emotion, that the other thing that Jews will do is they will simply try to wear you out by never giving ground. So the Jew may lose the argument, but he'll come back and he'll have the same argument with you again and again and again. And he will simply try to beat you down by not accepting your responses. So whatever response you give, he will come back and he'll just keep on countering it, he'll just keep on mucking you around, and eventually you're going to get frustrated, and you may give in because he's so persistent. He's like a boxer in the ring, and he's basically trying to stay in the fight by not accepting that he's been knocked out. So you may already have landed punches on him where logically you've disproven his argument. But he won't care about that. He's going to come back at you again and again, and he's going to irritate and frustrate you and even anger you because he refuses to accept what you're saying, regardless of how accurate it is, because he knows that if he accepts what you're saying, that it's bad for him. So he'll try through persistence to not quit. And Jews can be very persistent. They can carry on even for decades as a group, hammering away at certain things. They don't give up. They can be back even 100 years later, and they will still go back to that thing, and they'll argue with you again over something that happened 100 years ago, where the facts were on your side, and they'll be trying to prove you wrong. These people don't stop. For them, like with Henry Kissinger, perception is everything. And whatever perception they need at that point in time, they will go for it. And a final thing about the Jews lying. Jews will also lie as a group. And if the Jews get to surround you, and they know that this is important to them, they will all lie to you in unison. And they will do this over and over again. I actually did a video about this. And Adolf Hitler referred to this as what he called forgers' tactics, where they come and they bludgeon down on you mentally, and they all try to mislead you as a group. And I'm quite convinced that they've managed to mislead the entire Western world, the entire Western world. As a whole, they've misled it on multiple occasions on a grand and incredible scale. But they do it because they know where they need to go. They know what's good for them. Another thing about emotional arguments. Emotional arguments, women are very susceptible to these. White women are easily bowled over by emotional arguments. And you'll find that, especially with spiritual stuff, that you'll be hit with all kinds of spiritual arguments. Oh, it's emotional. Why don't you care for these poor people? Don't you feel sorry for them? Look at them. And you treated these people so bad. Guilt is another one. Guilt is also a Jewish angle. And Jews are even proud of having invented guilt. Jews know what it is that they want. And their key angle is to get you there by any means possible. And it's all mental trickery. When I used to read Jewish articles and my Jewish friends used to send me stuff, I used to read it for its logical content. I used to look and see, okay, is 1 plus 2 equal to 3? Yes. Is that in line? When you start reading Jewish stuff, you should read articles and things written by rabbis, journalists, politicians. You should start taking a closer look at the logical content of all Jewish arguments. And you will find that their content varies. And you'll find that every Jew introduces some new little angle. And if you've got 100 Jews, you'll have 100 variations. You know, it's not like one shade of gray. If you have 100 Jews, you'll find 100 shades of gray. And if you look next week, you'll find yet another 100 shades of gray. You will find that where we whites are looking for objective truths that are fixed in our minds, that the Jew is constantly massaging everything to adjust to the new conditions. There's also been a thing in recent times where somebody came up with a book and they spoke about emotional intelligence. And they started with the whole business that, oh, people who succeed in life are not the people with the highest IQ. They are the people with the highest emotional IQ. So they say, oh, it's not your actual cleverness that's important. It's how you deal emotionally with the world. And I'm quite certain that that's yet another Jewish piece of nonsense, that they are trying to mislead you away from logic. White people may think that they've lost the world because they are not able to survive this onslaught against logic. But my prediction is that Jewish emotional logic actually ultimately causes so many long-term problems that you'll find that Jews get overwhelmed when vast numbers of whites eventually figure out, long after the fact, how they've been hoodwinked, cheated, and fooled, and that this gains a momentum of its own. And Jews, therefore, are dogged by anti-Semitism. It doesn't matter where they go, it doesn't matter where they live. After a long time, there is this anti-Semitism that arises, and it's a natural response to the slower thinking, detailed thinking whites who finally figure out, oh, you remember 30 years ago? Ah, oh, that happened. That's where they fooled us. They screwed us over there. And little by little, the whites eventually start catching up with all these things where the Jews have beaten them. And then eventually, as the whites start looking at this, the whites grow angry because white society is based on high trust. We are actually a warrior society. We're actually a warrior society, and we operate like warriors. And our natural state is high trust because you can only function as a warrior if you are high trust. And you'll find that Jews are a low trust environment, a low trust society. And we may have our problems, but our problems are far less because we are consistent, we are fair, and we have objective facts. Jews, on the other hand, have situations where they can get away with their nonsense for a long period of time, but eventually it starts catching up to them. And it can get so bad that they become overwhelmed with it and they have to actually flee from various locations because the people get so angry. The Jews, of their own accord, when they are looking at themselves and comparing themselves to us, they also look down on us. This is my view. They look down on us because they're saying to themselves, oh, look at this. I came up with this trick and these stupid people fell for it. Ha 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 ha. And these Jews are quite excited and delighted that we were stupid enough to fall for a trick. And they also have no remorse for the fact that we fell for the trick. Whereas they will preach guilt to us. They won't preach guilt among themselves. They will say, well, if those people were stupid enough to accept my stupid argument, then I deserve to win. I'm cleverer than them. And that's how these people function. So they look on these things and they glorify themselves and they say, well, if those people are dumb enough to listen to what I'm about to tell them and they fall for it, it proves I'm superior. And they're inferior. And so the Jew reinforces his own Jewish racism by looking at it that way. But you must be careful of emotional arguments. Emotional arguments are extremely dangerous. And white women especially fall for these things. They fall for them hook, line, and sinker. You go to a white woman and you start saying to her, oh, you see, the answer is love. And if we only loved each other more, and there was more peace. You're telling these women the very things that they emotionally need to hear. These women have got insecurities, they don't like violence, they don't like uncertainty, they have natural motherly caring tendencies, and the moment you hit them with this kind of stuff, it totally works on them and they find it emotionally irresistible and their emotions just go for it. They no longer have to think in logical terms. They will feel that this is correct. They won't think it's correct. They will feel it's correct. And then they'll say, oh, yes, we must love more. And that is how these women are fooled by this. White women are unbelievably susceptible to the kind of Jewish nonsense that goes on, and it's very dangerous. That is why white women in government who are now faced with all kinds of emotional stuff. They struggle to deal with this. And you don't have the hard, cold, male attitude that blocks these things. If you hit them with emotional arguments, they're going to be overwhelmed. They're going to fall for it. And it's the perfect territory for Jews. So things like guilt and suffering and all kinds of pain, and we need to take the pain away. These things, the women just fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. And when they hear love mentioned as part of it, they're goners. They won't survive. They fall for it immediately. I had an Afrikaans friend who also said to me once, guy I knew well, and he said to me once, oh, I have this Jewish friend, and he's exactly like me. He's exactly like me, he said. And I said to him, man, you don't understand these people. There's no ways he's exactly like you. I know the guy. I know how he works. I know how he thinks. I've seen what he does. I admire what he does. And I'm thinking to myself, buddy, if you think your Jewish friend is exactly like you, the Jew has already fooled you. And it is the subtle nature of the Jews' methods that fool most people. Most people cannot conceive that you can meet somebody who'll just lie to your face, that you'll meet somebody who has a total disregard for facts, and that this person will just change the facts according to what he needs for the argument in order to win the argument. They cannot conceive this. So we are very fixed in our way of thinking. I will later explain why our way of thinking is the superior way of thinking and why our methods are the greatest methods of all. Our problem lies in the fact that we can be easily misdirected for periods of time. Sometimes these periods of time can be long. They can be decades even. That Jews can completely mislead you down a path. And you won't know it. One generation after another will be fooled by it. And these Jews are only interested in how they can make you operate. And there are even times when Jews have been confronted about telling lies. White people as a group just cannot perceive that people can live totally dishonest lives, that people can lie through their teeth, and that facts are like putty in their hands, that they'll just mold the facts into whatever they want them to be. White people just cannot grasp this. And it's good and it's bad. The first thing is it's good that whites don't do it, because this is why whites move forward and why whites can attain and achieve things that nobody else on the planet can achieve. Jews, on the other hand, can't do those things, but Jews aren't interested in building rockets and doing all kinds of hard stuff. Jews are just focused on people, and all the Jews need to do is make people do what they want them to do. Or, if they perceive there are certain angers and emotional problems there, they can tap into it and unleash a flood of powerful stuff by tapping into the emotions of a group of people. They can tap into racial emotions, sexual emotions, and off they go. So they unleash forces that are within people. They unleash emotional forces and they pick the ones that they want to benefit from, or they create what they need. But this total disregard for facts is something that white people just cannot grasp and understand. And one of the best examples I came across of this was, I think his name was Rosenberg. He was a Jew who told a lie about being in a Nazi concentration camp. And then there was this other little Jewish girl on the other side of the fence. And how he met this little Jewish girl. And later he managed to survive the death camps of the Nazis, and he married the little girl. It was something like that. It was like a whole emotional love story thing. And as happens often on many occasions, Jews get caught out. Somebody catches them out, and it actually gets into the media for a while, or it gets into a part of the media, and the Jews see to it that it doesn't spread to a wider media. So it gets to a part of the media, and some people confront the Jew. And they confronted this Jew, and they said to him, what you told was a lie. Aren't you ashamed of having told a lie? And the Jew was quite angry about it. And the Jew said, if I had to do it over again, I would do it exactly the same way. And people cannot understand that. Like, we caught you telling a lie, and you're telling us that if you were in the same situation again, that you would tell the same lie again? And they're like, what? But they don't understand how the Jew thinks. The Jew's actually being honest. He's interested in the effects of the lie. The lie made him money. He got a whole lot of attention out of the lie. He's not hassled by the lie. He made money out of the lie. He got people to listen to him. So what's he worried about? He functions on an emotional level. And we function, we, whites especially, function on a logical level, objective truth. I want the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. I want the real facts. And you just can't understand these people. But it's because you do not understand what they are aiming for. They are aiming to manipulate people. That's what they're looking at. And so that's also why Jews have got utterly unique problems. And the one utterly unique problem that all Jews have everywhere, and it makes them paranoid actually, is anti-Semitism. They say, there are always these anti-Semites, and it doesn't matter where they go, and it doesn't matter how long they live there. Eventually they notice, oh goodness, the anti-Semitism, it's increasing. Why is it increasing? As if it's a mystery. It's simply a case that they move in, they've fooled people, and they've been fooling people so much, and they've been getting rich and powerful off of it. And then later, these other, let's call them slower people, but they are slower and more accurate people. The slower and more accurate whites start catching up to it, and then they start saying, ah, you remember that one there, that thing there. That's where we were fooled. And did you see that guy committed that crime and that guy lied over there? And then the whites go into a, let's call it a recovery mode, where the whites start now bringing in trust. Then the whites start saying, okay, you can't trust a Jew. Bring down the trust levels in a Jew because we used to trust them completely. Now we've got to trust them less and trust them less and trust them less. And so that is how these Jews eventually get to the point where nobody trusts them, nobody wants them, and people want to get rid of them. And so that's why the thing that always haunts the Jews is their previous crimes, the lies they told, the naughty things that they got up to that people didn't know about. And all it is it's really a case of karma. If you followed the Buddhists, it's karma. Karma is catching up to you. God is coming to punish you for your crimes. Well, the Jews are unique at being able to escape the punishment for their crimes because the Jews are taught, okay, there may be a time where you have to run away from this place, go to another country or another city, and they're even advised, change your name so that people don't know you and start all over again. So Jews function also in a space where they start out with great success because they move into a high trust society of whites, where the whites trust everybody. And then as the centuries go by, the trust levels on the Jews are reduced and reduced and reduced and reduced. And then eventually, nobody trusts a Jew anymore. But as these trust levels are falling, the Jews are also starting to fail. Now the Jews are no longer as successful as they were because the distrust of Jews, as the distrust of Jews goes up, the Jewish prophets and power starts breaking. Thus, Jews have got a utterly unique problem in the world, anti-Semitism, which is karma catching up to them. And even there, they've got 101 tricks for getting out of it. But they always have to be permanently paranoid because they are so loose with the facts. They have to be paranoid because they've got to watch, you know, when are the people starting to get onto them? And then they've got these ways of like quietening people down, misleading them, fooling them yet again, you know. And it's a case of continuously fool these people, continuously fool these people. And you may have to fool them 100 times before eventually they can't take it anymore and they're running off to find the Jews and hang the Jews or chase the Jews out. And then the Jews know, game over, you know, we can't win anymore. Our bullshit is giving us less and less positive returns, you know, so we got to run for it. Those are completely unique Jewish problems. No other race of people suffers from this problem. And the Jews themselves have got all the mechanisms in place for, we got to have Jews here, we got to have Jews there, got to let Jews into this country, and then the Jews can move from the one country to the other. You'll see Jews are constantly moving around from one country to another. And then the Jews will say, oh, you see, people treat us so badly that we have to wander the face of the earth. No, the reason that you have to wander the face of the earth is because the people you live with are the people that you lie to and you cheat them, and then those people want to get to you, and then you got to run for your life eventually. Eventually your bullshit starts failing, and no matter how good you are at bullshit, eventually that bullshit no longer saves you, and then you got to run for your life. And that's what happens to the Jews. And that's what happened in Germany, it happened in Spain, it happened all over Europe. Jews were thrown out of places hundreds of times, sometimes for centuries at a time. Jews would be expelled. Spanish expelled them for 500 years. Not a single Jew allowed into Spain for 500 years. The English, the French also threw them out for 300 years at a time. So that is why anti-Semitism is always a continual problem following these Jews. But it's actually just karma following them. It's just their crimes are catching up to them, but they're able to move faster than their crimes can catch them. That's the real issue here. But the key thing that I'm trying to get at is that Jews are not arguing with you logically. Jews are working on you to control you, to make you do what's going to work for them. And they're only interested in what's going to work for them. And that's what this whole thing is about. So that's just to give you some insight into Jews. And these people have a total, total disregard for facts. Total disregard for facts. If you study their history, you'll see that there's no such thing as anything firm in the world of the Jews. They have a total and utter disregard for facts because they are busy working on emotions. And your mind, their goal is to make you like them. Even more importantly, if they have to choose between you liking them and them making money from you, but you dislike them, they always choose them making money or gaining power, even if you dislike them. What's more important to them is that you are doing things that are working for them. They will only get concerned if they see that this dislike is turning into a hatred and no amount of bullshit can put out the flames anymore. That's when these people start really getting worried. And they themselves know that this can become very violent. So you'll always find that Jews always have problems also with the people they live amongst. It's the people close to them that begin to hate them. You'll notice that the hatred follows them, and it's always around them. That's why they've got to keep on the move. They've got to keep moving along. Because if they don't do that, then the people are going to kill them. And, you know, people have tried to do these things before. The Jews always talk about these pogroms. And the Jews tap into our emotional weaknesses big time. So they see that, we care for people. So then they say, aha. Then they present themselves, oh, you see, we're always hard done by. We don't understand why these people are so nasty to us. They're just not being nice to us, and we didn't do anything. And so that's how the Jew angles that sort of thing. That's how he angles it. And that's how he enters his new place, and he tells you, oh, those horrible Germans. We had to flee the horrible Germans, horrible Spaniards, horrible Italians, horrible English, horrible French, horrible everybody. Everybody is horrible to them, but they never are at fault. They don't understand why they are never at fault. And that is because if they were honest with you and they said, well, you see, we did this and this and this and this, then you'd say, well, you deserve that. And they can't have that. They can't sit around and, take responsibility for something. Their goal is to make you do something that's going to work for them. So they immediately set about lying. And we call it lying, but to them, they just massage the facts. They just massage anything until they get you to accept something. And then they've got you. Then whites always make the mistake of saying, oh, okay, come. These are nice Jews. You come, you live in our society, everything's going to be good. And then 200 years later, the whites are furious. And you get the whole thing repeating itself again. Jews fleeing again off to the next place. However long it takes, 100 years, 200 years, 500 years, whatever it is. And then you see eventually the whites just can't take it anymore. The Germans took them in for 600 years, 600 years until they couldn't take it anymore. And then they said, get the hell out. And I think in that regard, the Germans may actually be the people who coexisted with the Jews for the longest period of time and left them among them and had them among them for the longest period of time. But no matter how patient you are, it just doesn't work out. And it's because you've got these two completely clashing systems. Our way of thinking, which is the correct and superior way of thinking, because it allows whites to do things that nobody else can do. There are many, many things that white people do that nobody else can do. That nobody else can do and not even come as close to being as effective as whites. But you can only do it in a high trust environment. Jews, therefore, also suffer from other problems. They cannot get certain things up to certain levels because even among themselves, there's a certain lack of trust. So they suffer from very particular problems that relate only to them, only to them. And their problems are different to the problems of whites, but the problems of whites are much less because we're an older people and our methods of truth and fairness and objective facts actually works out better in the long run. In the very long run, it actually works out much better. So that's why Jews are constantly on the move. So for them, making money, getting success is more important than whether the people like you, and they need to make their moves fast and get the hell out. And if you look around the world, you'll see Jews constantly moving around. Jews moving from this country to that country. Then they're here, then they're there. Jews have even been moving back to Germany, back into Europe. The very places that they hated. There are Jews who move from Israel to go and live in Berlin. So here are these Jews, and they're busy telling you, oh, Hitler, the Holocaust, everything, the Nazis are so terrible. And what will you find? You'll find Jews in large numbers from Israel moving into Germany, living in Berlin. They go and they live in the city where Adolf Hitler lived. Why are they there? If they hate the Germans so much, if it was such a terrible place for them, why are they leaving Israel and they go and live in Germany? Well, it's because there's more opportunities and money to be made in Germany than there is in Israel. That is what these people are about. These people are wanderers. They are wanderers and they've got their mechanism that works for them. And it's my view, it's my personal view, that because they never get punished properly, they carry on with this behavior. they carry on with this behavior because they never get punished properly. They get away with 99.99% of their crimes, and then because of that, they say, well, this is working for us, okay? So, I mean, so what if I had to move from Germany to America? The fact is I walked out with this bank account, and they have got dependencies on us and our systems. So even things like currencies and the fact that we got banking and transactions and you can move money, these are all the kinds of things that they need in order to exist. I also think that Israel, when they started out with Israel, that the Jews grew tired of fighting, the Jews are growing tired of working, and the Jews are actually more and more returning to their old methods. And they actually, you will find that most Jews do not live in Israel. They may run to Israel to avoid prosecution in other countries and so on. But you'll find that these people are constantly on the move. And why are they constantly on the move? Because their karma is catching up to them. People are realizing, ah, we were tricked here, we were lied to there. Did you see what they did there? Did you see how much they stole there? Did you see what they did with corruption there? And that's why anti-Semitism always follows the Jews. Controversy always follows them. Everywhere they've lived, you'll just find controversy, controversy, controversy. And then Jews have got all these labels by which they defend themselves. Oh, this is anti-Semitism. That is blood libel. You'll hear all these weird terms that you've never heard before. Only terms used by Jews. Nobody else does it. The Asians don't need it. The blacks don't need it. The whites don't need it. Only Jews need these things. Only Jews. And it's because other people are trying to work on objective facts and they build up trust in people. Whereas the Jew sucks the trust out of people. He takes trust and he milks it for all he can. And then when the people eventually realize they must stop trusting him, then he's got to run away. And there the old cycle goes. But Jews have a total disregard for logical debate. All kinds of logical debate is a waste of time with these people. They are focused on people, emotions, mental weaknesses, emotional weaknesses, and that's the core of what they are operating with. And that is why these people have got a total disregard for lying. You'll even find that on rare occasions, you'll get like one Jewish newspaper will say, oh, well, this guy was caught out lying. But you won't see them all blaring it out across the public. And when they get caught lying, they aren't even apologetic. When they lie, they don't even feel that it's like a bad thing. The only thing that irritates them is if they were caught out lying. Then the thing that annoys them is that they were caught out. It's not that they are irritated by the fact that they were lying. They're irritated by the fact that they were caught out. That's what irritates them. And you've got to understand that you can only operate like this if you have a total disregard for facts and the game that you're playing is to mess with other people's heads. And you see, what these people have discovered, in my view, is that they've discovered that as a small group, they can fool huge numbers of people. And so for them, they've discovered that propaganda is a very powerful tool. And they found that they can lie to 1,000 people, 100,000 people, 1 million people, 100 million people. They can lie to the entire planet. And most of the people on the planet buy into it. And returning to Henry Kissinger, same thing, you know. Perception is more important than reality. And that is one of the golden keys to understanding these people, is that they're interested in what you think the reality is. They know that if you think this is so, that you will behave in that way. And that's what they need. It's all about herding people, especially white people, but even all people, herding people like cattle. That's what this is about. They're herding people like cattle. And they're trying to get this group of cattle to do this and that group of cattle to do that. And if it suits them, they can even have the two groups of cattle fighting each other. And they don't care, because they just sort of manage the perceptions and see to it that as long as nobody's killing them, they're okay. You are dealing with people who are functioning in a completely different world. So in the next audio, I'll tackle the problem of Jews as managers and whites as workers. So thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.